Well, it was a sweep. We'll react to the NBA Finals.
And now that the regular season is over and the draft is upcoming, we've got the rumor roundup for what you need to know.
And what's going to happen in free agency? We set you up for the summer. This is the Locked On NBA Podcast.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
A little different on this Monday because we've got a big draft thing coming up later this week, so we've rearranged the week a little bit. So on this Monday, we're taking care of you. We usually do the Wednesday podcast, but I, John Corrales, along with Jake Madison, we're here for you to walk you through everything, get you set up for the draft. Like we said, the free agency and a little bit of talk about the finals since this is your first podcast, the first lockdown podcast since the finals. I am John Corrales. You can get me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. Find my work at RedsArmy.com and Boston.com.
And I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast at NolaJake on Twitter. And you can find my work over at LockedOnPelicans.com.
So, Jake, it went pretty much how we thought it would. The Golden State Warriors swept the Cleveland Cavaliers. They just pretty much put their foot on the gas and ran away with it on Friday night. So, what do we make of this? I guess the two big questions coming out of this are, is LeBron gone from Cleveland, and are the Warriors just so dominant that people went back on their they've ruined basketball thing? The owner after the game was saying, we'll do whatever we can to keep this group together. Kevin Durant is going to be a free agent, but he's made every indication that he's going to sign. So of those two things, like, what's your reaction to, first of all, LeBron and being gone?
Yeah, you know, like you said, this kind of went the way we thought it was going to, if not a sweep, then in five games, I think, with sweep maybe being the more likely of the two. And when you and I were previewing game three last week, we were struggling to come up with ways that Cleveland could win that game or kind of get their foot back into the series. And it all kind of hinged on hope and hope things go right for you and hope things don't go right for the Golden State Warriors. And that's not really a good plan and something you want to kind of lean into. So yeah, you know, because of that, it makes you feel like LeBron should leave Cleveland. You know, he's had a great run there. He gave him a title. What more can they really ask from him? And they just haven't put the players around him consistently enough to really threaten this Golden State team that's probably the all-time best team ever, I think, maybe is the way to kind of look at it. So it makes you feel like you should be gone. And then you kind of look around and yeah, there's good options, but they all come with drawbacks and negatives. So it's really going to have, you know, it's going to weigh on LeBron on what he wants to do anywhere he goes, whether it's Houston. He's going to face the same criticism that Kevin Durant's kind of receiving right now for playing with the Warriors. Does he want to go to a smaller market where he's maybe the best player on the team, but they've got a homegrown guy there that takes some of the shine away from him? And does he want to even play in a smallish market again? Who knows? There are all these kind of questions, and you know, it kind of leads you to believe maybe it's better off in Cleveland. And then you go back and think about the series, and he's definitely not better off in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, Cleveland is stuck. Cleveland is in a big, big mess because of their cap. They owe a lot of money to a lot of people, and they're just not able to make any real moves that can make that team better. The only thing that they can hope for is that LeBron is just comfortable there, and his family is comfortable there, and you look around the league and you say, like you said, everything comes with so many drawbacks that you might as well take a year and hope that after this year they can come up with other options. Because after this season of 2018-2019, if LeBron, let's say he opts back in and they just try to run it back, well, after that, Kevin Love has a player option, but he can he'll probably pick that up. But George Hill will be gone. J.R. Smith will be gone. Clarkson and Thompson are on the last years of their deals. They could be traded potentially. Korver, non-guaranteed year, you can get rid of him. Then that 2019 season is potentially a kind of reset. And if he trusts Kobe Altman and trusts Ty Lue, and you say, look, we got to the finals this year, it's going to be tough next year, but if it's one down year and then we can pick it back up again, then maybe he decides to stay. I think that's a little bit of a long shot, but who knows? Personally, as a Celtics fan, I actually want him to go to Los Angeles. I want him to be a Laker.
You want him out of there.
Yeah, I want him out of Cleveland. I want him out west. I'm happy to, A, have the Lakers, Warriors, and Rockets all just beat the hell out of one another for three rounds and then come into the finals just beaten and broken. And then I think it'd just be, from a story perspective, from a Celtics guy, if the Celtics can go out and win a championship by beating the Lakers and LeBron's on that Lakers team and the Celtics win the championship, that would be amazing. That would be just such a fun story from a Boston side, and you get that Lakers-Celtics rivalry reignited. That would be a lot of fun for me.
No, it would be, but here's the issue with him going out west, which I think is maybe the biggest knock on all these teams that he could go to out there, is you still got to get the past the Warriors, and you're still likely not going to be able to do that. It still does take a year for teams to gel, even if he teams up with someone like Paul George in L.A. They find some room to re-sign Randall, let's say, and they have a very good roster there. It takes a bit to put it together, and is it maybe better to stay in the East and at least make the finals versus go out west and not necessarily get there? And I think that's kind of one of the big things and why there's drawbacks to everything he does and decisions he's making. Let's look at from the Warriors side, though. I'm curious what you think here. Do they look beatable at all to you, even with LeBron doing what he could, and maybe with a broken hand that has come out kind of after that game, or a near broken hand or whatever it was that maybe limited him? You know, they should have won game one. Is this Warriors team just maybe one injury or one thing kind of going sideways for them, a way of not making the finals or not being the NBA champions?
I think there is definitely some of that. They are more beatable next season than they have been in the past. Iguodala will be a year older. It's going to be tough for them to put that roster together. They're probably going to have to run it back with some of these guys. So they'll have to pay maybe Looney and McGee and West. They'll figure out what to do with McCaw, who's a restricted free agent. They're not going to have cap room to sign free agents. They're not going to they can't hard cap themselves, so they're not going to have big exceptions, the full mid-level exception, to go out and get guys. So they're going to have limited exceptions to add to their roster. So they'll probably only have like $5 million, $5.5 million, whatever that taxpayer mid-level is, to spend. So they're basically going to have to run it back, which, fine, they can run it back. But we saw this year that there's a significant problem with complacency. Draymond Green did not play like Draymond Green until the playoffs. We turned it on. But then next year, he's going to have to go through the whole same thing again. It's a little harder to just turn it on year after year. And then you're going to have that complacency from the other guys. You're going to have to rely on these players that were sort of iffy before. And if there's any sort of injury, like I said, with Iguodala or somebody else, then you run into a little bit of trouble. Houston's hungry. Whatever team, if LeBron goes to the Lakers, let's say, they're going to be super hungry. That's not going to be an easy run. And we heard David West after game four say, "You guys didn't even know. You guys don't even know how hard it was." Like, kind of teasing to some sort of discord or something in the locker room that, to their credit, didn't get out, but made it sound like it was difficult. It's not easy. It's not easy to do it every year, even when you've got all of those great players. One little slip in focus, slip with injury, slip with something, then they could find themselves on the other end of one of these game sevens.
Yeah, we make fun of Kevin Durant for going there and people call him soft, and I'm not of that mindset, and that's a discussion for another day, but they really needed to sign him to potentially win these back-to-back titles, because I think they do show they're vulnerable at times, more so than maybe we were expecting them to be. And if things don't fully break their way at times, they might not have made it into the NBA Finals in the first place, because Houston played them very, very well, and it just shows you that one injury, one thing can maybe change this. And well, people want to go out there and say they've ruined basketball. No, there's some vulnerability there. It's not a ton, and you need to strike while it's available and have the right team to take advantage of it, which the Cavs didn't have. But you know, I don't think this is a thing that's where they're just going to win every single title the next couple of years in sweeps like this, because, man, you know, again, they should have lost game one. The Rockets took them to game seven. There's a chance they drop down a little bit, which is still putting them at a very high level. But maybe that door and that window for other people are a little bit more open than just the Warriors completely slamming it in their faces, let's say.
Yeah, so they'll start next season as the obvious favorites. But however everything shakes out, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But however everything shakes out, there will be other challengers, and there will be opportunities to beat these guys, somehow, some way. They're not as invincible as they have seemed in the past. We'll get more on this. There's going to be a whole summer of this to talk about it. So we'll leave it there. I will say that if you want more on the Warriors situation or the Cleveland situation or any other team situation that we're going to talk about, there is a Locked On NBA, Locked On podcast besides the Locked On NBA for all teams. On the NBA side, if you are a football fan, these guys are in their summer mini camps, these mandatory mini camps, whatever, already. Football is a year-round sport. There's a Locked On for every NFL team. And it's baseball season. If you're a baseball fan, we're starting to trickle in and get some Locked On baseball podcasts out there. So go ahead and search for your favorite team, NBA, NFL, or MLB. If the MLB is not there, it will be soon. Search for them wherever you get your podcast, wherever you found the Locked On NBA podcast. Okay, draft is coming up, and there's been some kind of talk here about who's going to go first and who might be making their way up the draft board and what Phoenix might do. There's a lot going on here in the upcoming draft. So let's talk a little bit about that. DeAndre Ayton seems to be the consensus top pick, but there are others. There are others who are starting to kind of make their case. And I know Marvin Bagley has been like, nah, hold on. Let's hold off on this top pick. Mo Bamba's out with videos that show his shooting stroke has been significantly improved. People are starting to wonder about him moving up the draft board. So it's kind of interesting to see how these things might shake out, potential trades going down the line. This draft is going to be super interesting.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of one of, I think, the more interesting drafts in a while, where a lot of teams might make some moves that kind of shake up the order. Maybe you fall in love with certain prospects that have been coming up. It definitely seems like Ayton's going to be number one overall to Phoenix. But, you know, this is maybe stupid to say, but they're the key player in this draft. Of course, they have the number one overall pick. They set the tone. But there's been some rumors coming out there, and you kind of see it now with the guys that are working out in addition, that they're looking to kind of trade back into the first round and maybe grab another lottery pick, which kind of makes a lot of sense for their timeline and what they want to be doing. And they've got some guys that can be moved, and maybe they're willing to take on some salary for the future to acquire another late first or first round pick. But they've worked out Trey Young from Oklahoma again. He's expected to go in that 7, 8, 9 range, maybe 6. Aaron Holiday, Drew Holiday's younger brother, is kind of rumored there. It sounds like they want to get a big and then trade back up and maybe get another point guard, a playmaker that kind of can be that other go-to scorer for them and pair him with Devin Booker. And then you've got kind of that rim protecting, rim running big. You know, they're kind of key in this whole thing because they've got assets to kind of do all of this. And from that alone, it might shake this draft up a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of chatter here about the Suns potentially moving up. You know, they have that 16th pick. I don't know that the thing with the point guards is there is depth in the draft when it comes to point guards. There are also point guards that are going to be available in free agency. You have to wonder exactly what they are looking to do, the Suns, with their backcourt. So if they are indeed looking to pair somebody with Devin Booker, you have the option of packaging 16 plus others. Maybe one of their players to move up. You also have the possibility that they will maybe look to acquire one of the available free agent point guards, or maybe a point guard that could be available if, say, the Celtics wanted to trade Terry Rozier.
And just throwing ideas out there,
just spitballing. they have an extra point guard that they're not going to need. And so if they want somebody, and Rozier's young, he's 24. I'm just putting it out there. But yeah, the Suns are players here. There are also players, the Clippers have consecutive picks in this draft. Are they going to make those two picks or try to package those and move up? It's interesting to see how far down Luka Doncic is, falling in some of these mock drafts when most people that I've listened to,
the consensus number one originally, and now maybe he goes something like four or five potentially even.
That would be wild. The people that I trust, and I certainly am not having extended conversations, but there are certain people when it comes to the draft stuff that I trust. They seem to think that Doncic is like a transcendent type of force. You know, he's a 6'8", point guard, can shoot, can pass, can defend, can do everything. And for some reason, I think because these other guys might be working out for these teams, and once a guy works out for you and you get to see those skills up close, GMs, owners get kind of fixated. We've seen a lot of that. They fall in love with players, and a better choice kind of falls down the draft or falls by the wayside. Again, a Boston example, the Hornets fell in love with Frank Kaminsky, and the Celtics wanted a couple years ago to trade a ton of assets.
That's one of the wilder moves that's never happened.
Yeah, to get it up there and to select
was it Justice Winslow?
Justice Winslow, thank you. Just throwing a total blank. Yeah. Danny Ainge fell in love with Justice Winslow. The Hornets fell in love with Kaminsky, and they passed up a ton of assets that they could use right now. Look how stuck the Hornets are. They could have used all of those assets and be in a completely different situation. And the Celtics might not be these contenders that they are now. They could be sitting there with Winslow going, huh, maybe we made a mistake. Instead of having Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they could be sitting there with Winslow and nothing else.
There's a couple players, though, that I think might kind of cause this to maybe happen in this draft. You've got Mo Bamba, who's got, what was it, a 7'10 wingspan, the biggest ever in the NBA Combine's history, which is just bonkers to me and looks like an elite rim-protecting big. And you've seen him shoot up draft boards a little bit. And if you saw the interview he gave to the media after the workout with the Suns, where he showed how smart of a player he is and how he's retooled his shooting stroke and kind of the different degrees and why that matters with elbow positioning and release angle, makes you kind of fall in love with this guy. And I think with Dallas sitting at five, if they take him, that maybe affects free agency, which we'll talk about in a moment here, and how where some of those guys go. So this draft is kind of pivotal from that angle as well, because all of a sudden, if they draft him, maybe they're not looking at DeMarcus Cousins or DeAndre Jordan or Julius Randle, and that throws everything out of whack when it comes to free agency, you know, just a week or so later on July 1st. Then you've got a guy like Michael Porter Jr., who can be really a scoring first kind of player for you, particularly to a team like the Clippers. And he's not going to last till, what is it, 12 and 13 or 13 and 14, wherever they're selecting to. They try and trade up because they've fallen in love with this guy. And it supposedly sounds like Ballmer was actually at the combine and stopped by to watch Porter work out and was there in his interviews after, which is kind of rare to see owners that involved in things. So there's a couple of players where it might force teams to trade up if they really fixate on a guy and fall in love with them.
Yeah, so I just love this time of year. When these things happen, it happens every single year, and no one ever seems to change. People will spend all season long looking at film, looking at games, and then somehow in workouts they fall in love with these players, man, and all of a sudden things change significantly, and teams make big, big, big mistakes. I'm curious to see if teams at the bottom of the draft are going to try to package to move up, or if they feel good being down there at the bottom of the draft. I think my inclination is that we see probably two or three trades in the first round of this year's draft. I think there's going to be some movement for sure. It's not just going to be a straightforward thing. I just think this is a year that's ripe for movement, teams with multiple first round picks. It's just, it feels like a situation where something's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You've got Philly who can be a major player in this draft with like a ton of second round picks as well. Multiple in the first, I think it is. And maybe they don't have the room to carry all of those young guys on this team when their roster's starting to kind of come into its own and compete right now. So do you trade up to get more of an impact guy? Or there are some prospects towards the end of the first round that I think make sense for some teams to save for and others not to. I'm going to give a shout out to my alma mater, Tulane, where they've got Melvin Frazier in there who's potentially going to be a very good 3-and-D type of wing. You've got Dante DiVincenzo out of Villanova showing off in those 5-on-5 workouts at the combine that he can shoot still pretty well. So maybe those are guys that help. But yeah, you're right. This is where there's going to probably be some movement in the first round just because some teams have multiple picks. They might fall in love with a guy. And I think that's what kind of makes draft night fun when it just doesn't go according to plan.
The Sixers have 6 picks in this draft. 2 first-rounders and 4 second-rounders.
You've got to trade those, right?
I didn't even realize they had that many in the second round. Yeah, there's no way you can keep all of those. This was like the situation the Celtics were in a little bit. They probably could sell one of those. I'm sure. I know that the Warriors are looking to buy into the second round. They could sell off one of those picks. They could package. They could trade them and trade into future drafts or try to package a few of those and trade up. The Sixers have options. They have a lot of options. Also a lot of options, all of us on the Lockdown Podcast Network, because we're doing this big, massive mock draft leading up to the actual draft. We're doing podcasts. That's why we're here on Monday. That's why our normal Wednesday slot has been taken so it can go to day one of our big Lockdown mock draft, picks 1 through 6, and we've got this whole, we're all acting as our own GMs, all of the hosts acting as our own GMs. There are trades. The people are moving up. People are moving down. Things are being offered. I can neither confirm nor deny that the Boston Celtics have players out there available for trades. But we're going to be putting on podcasts leading up to the draft. So it's the big, massive, locked-on NBA mock draft coming up. Be sure to check that out. Now, we'll wrap up the show talking about free agency. After the draft, there is going to be a significant amount of free agent movement. This summer, most people expect this summer to be a wild one. We talked a bit about LeBron James, but Kevin Durant's going to opt out. He's going to stay with the Warriors. But Paul George, Chris Paul, DeMarcus Cousins, you've got DeAndre Jordan out there, potentially. Clint Capella's going to get paid. Aaron Gordon, who's going to give him money. Julius Randle, are the Lakers going to end up keeping him after last year's weird scenario with him? There are a lot of big names out there that could move, and that could affect a lot. Like you said, the draft could impact where players go. But then there's a lot of secondary players. There's a lot of restricted free agents out there that, you know, guys like, well, not restricted, but J.J. Redick, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart. There's a lot of names out there in that secondary list that can help teams. So we talked a bit about LeBron. Let's move down the list.
Like, if you're ranking storylines for the offseason, like, LeBron is number one, first and foremost, by far. But then it's really kind of those other big names that you mentioned, Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins. You know, are they going to be moving teams? Does Cousins even really have a market here after the Achilles rupture and everything? Or is it just going to be he's going to come back to New Orleans? And then does New Orleans, my team here, who has a history of negotiating against themselves, just completely overpay him on the opening night of free agency? And that's a concern. I already have pre-scheduled my tweet when I heard that Omer Asik was being re-signed, where I beat Woj by about like 35 seconds, and I have it time stamped out there where they just gave him a huge contract on opening night of free agency. You might see stuff like that. This one's going to be pretty wild. And like you said, there's going to be a lot of player movement going on, but what do you think ends up happening with Paul George potentially?
If I'm Paul George's agent, I have him talking to the Sixers right away. I think the Sixers are the best fit for him. I think having, first of all, being the oldest and immediately the leader in that group works for him, but he doesn't have to be the number one option necessarily. I think he fits best. I would, if I was Philly, rather have Paul George than LeBron. And I know that sounds stupid to some people because obviously LeBron's the best player in the world. But at the same time, you don't have that baggage. You don't have that guy who's going to take over the franchise the same way that LeBron is. And you have a guy, I think, in Paul George that just fits better. You've got a star player that can play off of Embiid, that can play off of Simmons, that really just, I think, does a lot of the things that Philly needs and still plays defense. And LeBron, during the regular season, I think, would struggle with some of that. So I think Paul George to Philly makes too much sense.
Yeah, it does. But does anyone trust Philly right now after everything they just went through? And you and I talked about Colangelo last Wednesday. And does that kind of loom over them, or did they make the right decision in letting him go? And then, you know, you've got Brett Brown kind of running everything right now alongside Monty Williams there, who has front office experience now. Are those guys enough to kind of maybe sell free agents in their agents on Philly as a destination and kind of moving past all that dysfunction?
I think that they've done enough. Philly has to get past that. People, I think, trust Brett Brown, and he's kind of running things right now. And with Monty Williams there, like you said, I mean, it's a very trustworthy guy. It's a person that can walk into a negotiation with Paul George and, you know, immediately be like, hey, look, we had a problem and we fixed it. And from a Philly perspective, that would be my selling point if this came up.
Yeah.
We had a problem. We fixed it, and we didn't knee jerk. We looked into it. We talked to him about it. And we came to an agreement that worked for everybody, and we fixed it. So I think if I'm convincing a free agent, you say, look, if there's another problem that pops up, we'll do the same thing. We're not going to overreact because fans are crying for this or that. We're going to look into it. We're going to investigate it, and we'll do what's best for the team. And I think that settles a lot of people's nerves. But beyond that, beyond the trust, beyond all everything, Philly has the number one thing that free agents want, money. Number two thing that free agents want, a chance to win. And Philly is, you know, a fun city to play in if, you know, those fans are passionate. So you get a crazy crowd, you've got the opportunity to win, and you're going to make a ton of money. And you're playing with.
It sounds pretty good all around there.
Yeah.
And you're in the East, which helps too. And you have a better chance
of making it
to the finals. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's right there. You got to get past Boston. And, you know, if everything you look at the way things shake up, you got to get past Boston. You got to get past Toronto. And you don't feel too bad about getting past Toronto. We'll see what Boston is next season. Who knows? But they'll be right there. And so you have a tough conference final, but it's nowhere near as bad as having to face the Rockets and the Warriors.
Yeah, that it's kind of as simple as that. So you mentioned Toronto, and I want to kind of lump them in with maybe a team like Portland. Where are these teams in free agency that are going to really look at themselves in the mirror and wonder if they need to do something drastic and maybe either blow it all up or kind of make some sort of blockbuster trade, make some kind of signing trade, anything like that? Because it feels like both those teams are kind of in a weird stagnant spot, and they need to do something to kind of just shake out of whatever kind of funk they're in. And, you know, again, they're successful. They make the playoffs, but no one ever really thinks of them as a true title contender. And even Toronto, with the best record in the East this year, couldn't do it. So you feel like something almost has to be coming there, right?
I would have to entertain that, especially the Raptors, who, well, Portland's not exactly flush with cash either, but the Raptors are really,
they're like right up and have been ducking the luxury tax, what, the past year or two?
Yeah. The Raptors, though, are really in the weeds. They're really stuck. And they've got Van Vliet, who's a restricted free agent, and who knows what kind of money he's going to get. It's certainly going to be more than $1.7 million, which is his qualifying offer. But they're paying a ton of money. Lowry's making $31 million. DeRozan's making almost $28 million next year. Ibaka is making over $21. That crushes them. Valanciunas is making over $16. There's a lot of guys. They're very top-heavy payroll. You have to at least entertain the possibility that someone like Lowry or DeRozan becomes available, because or you say we've fired the coach and hopefully that's enough to get those guys and snap them into shape, because you have so little flexibility. And if you're the Raptors, having that opportunity to go to the conference finals versus breaking up the backcourt that got you that far, as far as you've gotten, it just may be more palatable for the fans to say, we have these guys with a new coach. We might as well just go run it back. And if LeBron's gone, then that takes away a big obstacle. I don't know. I go back and forth on them. What they have might be good enough for the Raptors and their fans. But from a championship perspective, God, you have to wonder. Maybe this isn't the offseason. Maybe it's next summer when Lowry is in the last year of his contract that you try to break things up.
Yeah, it's weird because they're kind of a candidate for it. I think Portland is too, and I think there's a couple of teams out there maybe, and there's probably some one we're not mentioning. Maybe it's the Wizards too, where you just kind of look at it and say, hey, we're paying way too much for our current roster to be in the state that we're in. So let's ship someone out that we wouldn't normally ship out in some sort of blockbuster move, something like that, that at least kind of injects some new blood or shed some salary while still getting you to the same spot that you are. And, you know, Portland, for basically a team that's got to pay the tax if they want to improve, getting swept out of the first round and not really making it far in the playoffs year after year, just it doesn't feel like that's what you should be doing with it. So that's kind of an intriguing thing to keep an eye on. Does anyone kind of get itchy and have like a bit of a nervous trigger finger here and kind of just remake their roster in, you know, some kind of weird move that maybe we don't see coming at all, because those tend to happen sometimes. And this feels like the summer where you've got the dominance of the Warriors, where you just feel like, okay, we've got to do something to kind of compete with them. Another thing though that you mentioned with some of the guys early on here, and we can touch on this quickly, is restricted free agency is going to be weird this year because there's not exactly a ton of teams with cap space out there. And the teams that do have cap space are chasing such bigger name players, and there's a number of them out there, that guys like Aaron Gordon and some of these other restricted free agents, are maybe going to get squeezed out a little bit. Like, what's going to end up happening with Julius Randle is going to be intriguing, and just kind of those type of crop of players.
Yeah, I think a guy like Gordon might be the one guy who gets paid, and it's kind of funny that he's just so fallen behind everything else. But you have to wait for LeBron and all these other guys to go where they go before someone else comes up with the money to pay him. Randle, I think, if the Lakers get LeBron, then it makes more sense to re-sign Randle than to let him go. But didn't they not pick up his option? I'm drawing a blank on what the Lakers did with Randle here as I call up their salaries.
That's a good point though. Basically, if they move him in some capacity, whether it's he leaves or what have you, they can potentially clear up almost three max roster spots, assuming you move Dang and some of those other guys as well.
No, so they've been, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, he is restricted. So
yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so I feel like something happened there that I just totally drew a blank on, but that's all right. Yeah, but back to your point, like I think it just makes sense for them to, if they get LeBron, to kind of bring him back and have a good young player around him. But the rest of the restricted free agents, if teams want to play hardball, and it's restricted free agency is where a lot of feelings get hurt, because I'm looking at Boston with Marcus Smart, with all of the point guards that are available, point guards in the draft, free agent point guards like you just said, with, you know, guards in Washington, Toronto, Portland that could get dealt. Where does a guy like Marcus Smart fit? The Celtics could just let him dangle out there, and instead of paying him $10 to $12 million, say, here's $8 million, here's $9 million, here's something cheaper, and they just are just kind of stuck. And players in those situations, what do? Sometimes they sign that qualifying offer, play for 1 year for less money, and then become unrestricted the following year. So restricted free agency is not the year to be a restricted free agent. It's a very, very tough year for those guys.
Yeah, I think you're going to see teams play very big-time hardball with these guys because they're all waiting, like you said, for LeBron to make a decision for where Cousins is going to end up going, Paul George, and they don't have any leverage until those guys sign and then people come knocking on their door. And do you want to be left out there dangling that long, you know, hoping that you get a longer term deal and that maybe you can finally get your money? Or do you take kind of what's in front of you, which is less than what you want, say in the case of Marcus Smart, but it's still $8 million where maybe another offer doesn't come through and you're playing for the qualifying offer if all of a sudden Boston pulls whatever they were giving you before. And that's even less money now, and it's a huge risk, and you bet on yourself. And we've seen some players do this recently where the situations end up that way, and it doesn't always work out well for them. Look at a guy like Nerlens Noel and what have you. So the restricted free agent market, those guys are in for a rough summer.
It's going to be interesting. Zach LaVine restricted, Jabari Parker restricted, Yusuf Nurkic restricted. Couple of those guys could get money, but not, you know, it's going to be tough. Elfrid Payton, he's not going to get a ton of money. It's certainly not going to be much money for them. Rodney Hood, after the playoffs that he got, what's he going to get? Like, those, a lot of restricted guys out there that are various levels of danger, I guess. It's tough for them.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. At least from their agent's perspective, anyway. All right, that's the show. A lot in this show today, kind of getting you set up for what is coming. What's next? We've got the Warriors and how they're going to fill out their roster. LeBron going somewhere or maybe not going somewhere. The draft is going to be super interesting. Again, catch our draft preview, our draft mock draft coming up starting Wednesday leading up into the actual draft. And all these free agents, this is going to be a wild summer. I guarantee you. This is not going to be a boring summer. A lot of players could potentially change teams. The money is going to be super interesting, and we will be here to talk about it all. I want to thank you all for listening. I am John Corrales, co-host of Locked On Celtics, founder of RedsArmy.com. Also, my stuff's on Boston.com. You can find me at RedsArmy_John on Twitter.
And I'm Jake Madison, host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast, editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com and at NolaJake on Twitter.
All right, that's the show. Come back tomorrow for much more. And again, that big mock draft starting Wednesday. Thanks for listening to the Locked On NBA podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.